Hi friends, I am your host Jade, and welcome or welcome back to Criminal Curiosity, the true crime podcast that dives into bizarre and fascinating cases. Together we talk about everything in the true crime world, whether you've heard of them or not. So buckle up and get ready to feed your curiosity with Criminal Curiosity. Joseph Christopher was born on July 26, 1955 in Buffalo, New York, to Teresi. His mother was a registered nurse, and his father was a maintenance worker in the city's sanitation department. Joseph had two older sisters and one younger sister. Joseph and his father bonded on everything outdoors, and hunting and shooting, so Joseph knew how to handle and knew how to shoot a gun from a young age, and he loved everything about this life. He loved shooting, he loved hunting, and the big, great outdoors. It was the only thing that really caught his interest. He studied automobile mechanics at the Burgard Vocational High School in 1971. People describe Joseph as a quiet person. He did well in school. He was intelligent, but he wasn't Albert Einstein type smart. He wasn't really that book smart. In 1974, Joseph dropped out of trade school and then began working different jobs here and there before he began working as a maintenance man at Canisius College, a private college in Buffalo. While working as a maintenance man, his co-worker, who they worked the night shift together, was a black man, and the two got on really well. They would drink, play pool, just listen to music together. Joseph's father passed away in 1976, and as Joseph's paranoid tendencies increased, he accused his co-worker of stealing a knife, when in reality he just misplaced it. In 1979, Joseph was fired and went to live with his mother. Joseph attempted to check himself into the Buffalo Psychiatric Center in September 1980, having realized that in 1978, that his mental health was deteriorating. The staff there told him that since he was not a danger to himself or to anyone around him, he could not be admitted. Which is insane, but this was a time where mental health was looked at as an invisible illness, and many people thought, you know, that if I can't see what's wrong with you, then nothing's wrong with you. And it's of course not like that today, thank God, but because people are more open about their mental health and they can get help without being denied simply because a worker doesn't believe you. 14 days after he was denied help, the murders started. Larry Robinson was driven by 14-year-old Glenn Dunn to the grocery store in Buffalo on September 22, 1980. After Larry went inside to cash his check, Glenn parked around the corner and waited for Larry to finish. When Larry returns to the car after cashing his check, he discovers Glenn is motionless and has three bullet holes in his head. Paramedics arrive at the scene, but 14-year-old Glenn Dunn was pronounced dead on arrival. Forensics arrived at the scene. The only fingerprints that they found belonged to Glenn and Larry. They found bullet casings that were fired from a .22 caliber. They discovered the car was stolen when they ran the license plate. When the police questioned Larry about the car, he said that he didn't know that the car was stolen, and he didn't even know Glenn. He just picked him up when he was walking and driven him to the grocery store. When they found out that the car was stolen, police initially thought that the murder was a result of the car theft. They started to hope that someone might know more about the murder. A nearby resident reported to the police that at approximately 9:45 p.m. while preparing dinner, she heard three gunshots and saw a white male dressed in a hoodie running. A psychiatric nurse who happened to be at the grocery store that evening was interviewed. She reported to police that after work, she walked to the grocery store and noticed Glenn standing outside his car. Now, being a woman and alone outside at night around men, she was a little uneasy and was scanning the area for someone that could help her in the event of an emergency. She saw a man sitting outside the grocery store, which she described as a white, slender man, with a paper bag in his lap, wearing glasses, a dazed look in his eyes, and wearing a hoodie. Police got another call the next day where 32-year-old Harold Green was shot to death at a fast food diner in Cheektowaga. Harold was shot in the left side of his head with a .22 caliber. Harold was eating his lunch in his car at a fast food restaurant when a white man walked up to the car, shot Harold, and ran away. An employee saw the man running away with a brown paper bag. Their first hard piece of evidence that connected these two murders were the cartridge casings from a .22 caliber. The same evening, police got another call. 31-year-old Emmanuel Thomas was shot and killed while crossing the street. Teenagers who were around the area at the time described the shooter as a white man, about 5'8", and again, forensics found another .22 caliber shell casing. Medical examiners discovered during Emmanuel's autopsy that there were powder burns near the entry wounds, meaning the muzzle was placed close to him when he was shot. The medical examiner concluded that the gun was a sawed-off rifle. In 36 hours, three black men were murdered with a .22 caliber gun, and the media called the killer the .22 caliber killer. On September 24th, 43-year-old Joseph McCoy was walking down the street in Niagara Falls when he was shot and killed. All the casings from the four murders were taken to ballistics, and through the firing pin impression, the ejector, and the extractor marks, they discovered that the specific type of gun was a Ruger 10/22 semi-automatic sawed-off rifle. An FBI sketch artist created a composite sketch of the killer based on the reports given by witnesses. Police would go door to door asking anyone if the composite sketch looked familiar. When construction workers in Amherst, New York, noticed an abandoned cab on October 8, 1980, they reported it to the state police. When the police arrived and searched the vehicle, they discovered a wallet that belonged to 71-year-old Parler Edwards. After breaking through the lock on the trunk with a crowbar, they discovered Parler Edwards dead from blunt force injuries and his heart was removed. Police didn't believe the shootings and Parler Edwards' death were connected because this was a completely different MO. On October 9th in Tonawanda, a man was driving when at the corner of the road he spotted a man laying face down and called the police. The man was identified as 41-year-old Ernest Jones, who, just like Parler Edwards, drove a taxi. He had his throat slashed and his heart was cut out. 37-year-old Colin Cole was a prisoner. He was recovering in a Buffalo hospital on October 10th following a drug overdose. A man enters Cole's room as visiting hours are about to end and attempts to strangle him. A nurse walked in and called security, but the man got away. Local law enforcement had little knowledge about serial killers, so they called in FBI behavioral analysis John Douglas to provide a profile on the .22 caliber killer. Douglas started examining every crime scene because he needed additional details to build a profile. He states that with the four shootings, he took the victim by surprise. He shot them fast and quickly ran away. In the murders of the two cab drivers, the victims were mutilated and bludgeoned. So to Douglas, these were two different killers. According to the profile, the murderer was an asocial between the ages of 25 and 28, who was comfortable with firearms and would struggle in the military before being discharged. Douglas added that the murderer had a history of low-paying jobs and was an enthusiastic hunter. Following the first six killings, Joseph Christopher enlisted in the United States Army. On November 13, 1980, he was sent to Fort Benning in Columbus, Georgia, and on December 20, 1980, he was allowed to return home for Christmas. 2 days later, there were two attacks and four murders. 25-year-old John Adams was stabbed at around 11:30 a.m. and survived. Ivan claims that at about 1:25 p.m., he saw a man on the subway chatting to a woman. The woman appeared irritated and got off at the next stop. The man just takes out his knife and stabs Ivan before leaving. He describes the man as a white man in his early 30s with brown hair, wearing a blue jacket. 2 hours later, at 3:30 p.m., 19-year-old Luis Rodriguez was walking in Midtown Manhattan when he was jumped by a white man who demanded his wallet. The killer lunged at him and stabbed him twice in the chest. Before Rodriguez died, he described the man to police as a white man with brown hair wearing a blue jacket. At 6:50 p.m., 30-year-old Anton Davis was found stabbed to death in front of a bank. 4 hours later, 20-year-old Richard Renner was stabbed to death in front of a hotel. By 11 p.m., the killer returned to the subway and fatally stabbed Carl Ramsey. Once more, when the news of these killings broke, the killer was dubbed the Midtown Slasher. A few days later, the police get a call from the Army's Criminal Investigation Division in Fort Benning. They were holding 25-year-old Joseph Christopher on charges of assaulting another soldier. On January 13th, Joseph attempted to stab a black soldier, Leonard Coles. While in custody, he tried to castrate himself with a razor, which means that he tried to remove his private part. The doctor began providing him medical aid, and he began muttering that he had been killing black men in New York. He didn't know the exact amount of victims, and he states that it was, quote, something he had to do, end quote. They searched his room at his mother's house and found glasses and clothing that matched eyewitnesses' accounts. In the basement, it was pretty much an underground firing range. They found his gun collection, they found .22 caliber ammo, a misfire .22 caliber cartridge, along with a rotary magazine. The rotary magazine was important because it showed that Joseph was able to have a full load of ammunition, and the sawed-off weapon could be concealed in a paper bag without having to reload the weapon. They got a second search warrant for the family's cabin in Ellington, New York. When they start looking around, they discovered the firing pin mark, the identical mark that is on the shells at the crime scenes. They came to the conclusion that all four crime scenes' shell casings, including the one from the cabin, originated from the same gun. Joseph was extradited from Georgia to stand trial in New York. The psychiatric nurse from the first murder was able to identify Joseph Christopher twice. In December 1981, Joseph was found mentally incompetent by the judge to stand trial. He received help, and on February 17, 1982, he was deemed fit to stand trial. The trial began on April 6, 1982. Joseph represented himself at trial and was charged with the murders of Glenn Dunn, Harold Green, and Emmanuel Thomas. He was found guilty and sentenced to 60 years to life. After the verdict, many people began questioning if Joseph really murdered these men. Some said that the composite sketch didn't match him and that there was little to no evidence. In a 1983 interview, Joseph claimed that he murdered 13 men, but didn't go into detail. When he was asked about the taxi driver murders, some sources say that he never said whether or not he was involved, but another source says that he knew information on the killings only the killer would know. Joseph Christopher spent the remainder of his life at the Attica Correctional Facility in New York. On March 1, 1993, after spending 11 years in prison, Joseph died from male breast cancer at the age of 37. End of episode thoughts. Wow, what a sick man to kill people because of their skin color. You know, why can't you just leave people alone? I saw someone asked about this case, about how he was able to join the military with paranoid schizophrenia, but was not fit to stand trial. And I don't know. I don't have the answers. And I couldn't find anywhere where he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. But what we do know is that Joseph's mental health was declining and he tried to get help, which was denied, which is bad. He should have never been denied help. But we aren't going to sit here and say that because he was denied help, he murdered 13 men. No, he murdered those men because he was a racist, he was sick, he was evil, and he had no regard for human life. And it's sad that these men lost their lives for no reason. And with that, today's story comes to an end. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Remember, every Thursday at 7 a.m., there is a new episode. You can keep up with me and the podcast at Instagram at Criminal Curiosity Pod. That is all that I have for you today. Please be safe out there. Look out for one another. Until next time, bye everyone.